Hi, this is Paul. I turned on my Twitter feed this morning and saw that Lex Friedman was releasing a podcast with Sam Harris. And it was 4.5 hours long, and I knew I wouldn't have 4.5 hours to listen to it, and I didn't know if I wanted to listen to it for 4.5 hours, so I went on Twitter and I said, okay, y'all, tell me if there's anything worth it. Maybe I did this actually yesterday. And a lot of the people on Twitter were super helpful, giving me some breakdowns of what it is. Most people said, the whole thing was a snooze fest. I've listened to little bits of it, and fortunately, Lex has some clips out, so I listened to some of the clips. One of the things that caught my interest most was his introduction.
His second time on the podcast. As I said 2 years ago, when I first met and spoke with Sam, he's one of the most influential, pioneering thinkers of our time. As the host of the Making Sense podcast, creator of the Waking Up app, and the author of many seminal books on human nature and the human mind, including The End of Faith, The Moral Landscape, Lying, Free Will, and Waking Up. In this conversation, besides our mutual fascination with AGI and free will, we do...
Now, I got a lot of really good feedback on Twitter that maybe I'll go into some of that thread, but...
You also go deep into controversial, challenging topics of Donald Trump, Hunter Biden, January 6th, vaccines, lab leak, Kanye West, and several key figures at the center of public discourse, including Joe Rogan and Elon Musk, both of whom have been friends of Sam and have become friends of mine. Somehow, in an amazing life trajectory that I do not deserve in any way, and in fact believe is probably a figment of my imagination. And if it's all right, please allow me to say a few words about this personal aspect.
Yes, please do.
Of the conversation, of discussing Joe, Elon, and others. What's been weighing heavy on my heart since the beginning of the pandemic, now 3 years ago, is that many people I look to for wisdom in public discourse stop talking to each other as often, with respect, humility, and love, when the world needed those kinds of conversations the most.
It's pitched a little high, I think. Elon, Joe Rogan, Sam Harris. He almost makes them sound like these are the top of the hierarchy in terms of where you can get wisdom from. Now, each of these people, including Sam Harris, have achievements that should be respected. I mean, what Elon has done, especially Elon and Joe Rogan, what they've done is really quite remarkable. What Sam's done, fair enough. He's carved out for himself quite a career. And Lex here is just sort of wants to keep the family together. It's like, mom and dad, do you really have to separate? Can't you work it out?
My hope is that they start talking again. They start being friends again. They start noticing the humanity that connects them that is much deeper than the disagreement.
Now, okay, so notice the humanity that connects them. But that connects everyone, including the guy selling gum over at the CVS at the end of the street. Now, Lex gets shellacked on Twitter pretty regularly for being shallow and soft and, maybe not as bad as Dave Rubin, but, pretty bad. And, it's not... as I said on Twitter, if you really want to, I don't necessarily push people hard, although I don't really seek celebrity interviews here. I mostly want to harvest stories. And it's my belief that if you're going to lean into a hard conversation, you need to first set the table with some real good relational ties so that you can continue to talk. And once you have sort of a more durable relationship between, then you can actually get into harder things and you can get into them better so that you actually have a degree of respect and can listen to one another. And of course, there's been a lot going back and forth with respect to Sam Harris, with respect to what happened with Sam Harris in COVID and Trump and on and on and on and on.
Agreements that divide them. So they start talking again. They start being friends again. They start noticing the humanity that connects them that is much deeper than the disagreements that divide them.
Now, why do you want this? Do you think that there's going to be a lot more wisdom that's put out because they interact and, you know, iron sharpens iron, et cetera, et cetera?
So let me take this moment to say, with humility and honesty, why I look up to and am inspired by Joe, Elon, and Sam. I think Joe Rogan is important to the world as a voice of compassion and curiosity and open.
There's just so, you know, buzzwords are holy words, and there's just so much sort of frothy buzzwords about this in terms of, you know, why?
Open-mindedness to ideas, both radical and mainstream, sometimes with humor, sometimes with brutal honesty, always pushing for more kindness in the world. I think Elon Musk is important to the world as an engineer, leader, entrepreneur, and human being who takes on the hardest problems that face humanity and refuses to accept the constraints of conventional thinking that made the solutions to these problems seem impossible.
And, you know, Elon isn't, his accomplishments aren't necessarily what comes out of his mouth in terms of little nuggets of wisdom and treasure to sprinkle among the masses. It's in terms of his, you know, the corporations and the businesses that he's putting out there.
I think Sam Harris is important to the world as a fearless voice who fights for the pursuit of truth against growing forces of echo chambers and audience capture.
Oh, okay, fair enough. So Sam was able to be a little bit heterodox with respect to some of his old friends. You know, his conversations with Brett Weinstein, his conversations with, you know, Brett Weinstein is one of the big ones because COVID really came between them. But what seems to have suffered in all of this is the imagined, how can we say it? The imagined purity of rationality that would lead people together to the same thing. The whole goal of this modernist monarchical vision of rationality is that, and I've run through this narrative many times in the Renaissance, you have this return to the sources, you have Martin Luther, who sort of believes that if you can get a good copy of the Bible and apply reason to it, then you know, you can look at the, you can sort of, you know, clean up the Vulgate and you can go back to the Greek and the Hebrew and apply reason. Then we can all agree in the church and everything. Well, agreement is not what happened. Reason did not bring agreement a la Martin Luther. It brought more conversation. It brought church fracture, et cetera, et cetera. And then, of course, in the Enlightenment, well, maybe with reason and empiricism, then we can agree. And that's Sam's whole thing. And of course, the problem is that, you know, you set Sam and, let's say, Brett Weinstein across from each other, and they will both declare to you that this is all about science and reason and fact, and they will in no way agree, and in fact, they will disagree so strongly that they can't even go on each other's shows and talk it out. And, you know, really? What does that say about your program? What does that say about your character that you can't even sit down and talk through some of these things? Now, again, remember what I said at the beginning of this, where you have to create the durable relational network in order to have those difficult conversations. In other words, I believe it needs to be within a container of love, where you can actually have the better conversation. And if you look at the conversations we're having in this little corner, I mean, Jacob is perhaps the poster child of people who will say the most outrageous things about the people he calls friends and then still stay friends with them. I mean, if you hear all the terrible things that Jacob says about me and my faith and my religious tradition and my ideas, you would think that you would think that Jacob is my worst enemy. But no, I get along quite well with Jacob. And the supposed blue sky, outdoor, fresh airness, unencumbered by the crusty delusions of superstitious religiosity. Somehow this rationality should be able to do this, but, you know, Sam... Sam can't play nice with anybody else. And Lex wants to kind of run in here and, oh, guys, can't we all be friends? And it's like, dude, you know, I appreciate that you've got him on the show. If you've really got a good relationship with him, you know, try and bring them together, you know, act like an intermediary, maybe have them both on your show at once so they can talk it through. You know, maybe Sam will refuse, in which case he's just sort of a, you know, I don't know. But this introduction, just the other thing that struck me was just sort of naive, just sort of naive. It's use words like humanity and use all of these words, and then suddenly, no, it's not just the use of these words. It's the practice, and it's the community, and it's the traditions, and it's the institutions, and it's the love. It's the love, and it's the capacity for love that gives the ability to hold to your center, yet extend graciously to have a conversation that leans in harder to seek the truth without getting defensive or brutal about it.
Taking unpopular perspectives and defending them with rigor and resilience. I both celebrate and criticize all three privately, and they criticize me, usually more effectively, from which I always learn a lot and always appreciate. Most importantly, there is respect and love for each other as human beings, the very thing that I think the world needs most now.
You know? I think the word is cloying. That's sort of the sense that this gives me. But, you know, he's got a good heart. I mean, that's what he wants. So Lex Fridman opens the whole thing with a touching, heartfelt, "I just want to keep the family together" speech, which is clearly a big part of who he is. And this clip, I tried not to do 4.5 hours, is unsurprising. Lex pleads his case about IDW fan family. Brett Weinstein and Sam is somewhere between explanatory and defensiveness. Nope, Sam is about orthodoxy above relationship. That was really interesting because, you know, for someone who made a career talking about how, you know, religious people are just bound by their orthodoxy, dude, you seem seriously bound by your orthodoxy.
That people would say about your talking about COVID, and maybe you can correct me, but you were skeptical, or you were against skepticism of the safety and efficacy of the vaccine. So people who...
Now, of course, we're 3 years into this thing. We have the third anniversary. My wife just pulled it up. This is the third anniversary of when school stopped. This about 3 years ago, and oh, we know a lot more. How about those vaccines? You know, and truth be told, Brett and Heather come through pretty good. A lot of skepticism about their skepticism about a lot of what they've done, but they've fared better than many in terms of this.
Who get nervous about the vaccine, but don't fall into the usual anti-vax camp, which I think there was a significant enough number.
Oh, yeah.
They're getting nervous. I mean, especially after the war in Afghanistan and Iraq, I too was nervous about anything where a lot of money could be made. And you just see how the...
And I think Lex nicely states the case here.
People who are greedy, they come to the surface all of a sudden, and a lot of them that run institutions are actually really good human beings. I know a lot of them, but it's hard to know how those two combine together when there's hundreds of billions, trillions of dollars to be made. And so that skepticism, I guess the sense was that you weren't open enough to the skepticism.
I understand that people have that sense. I'll tell you how I thought about it and think about it. One, again, it was a moving target. So there was a point in the timeline.
Well, and the whole purpose of this vaunted monarchical rationality is that it can somehow penetrate the distortions of the world, and
where it was totally rational to expect that the vaccines were both working, but they were reasonably safe, and that COVID was reasonably dangerous, and that the trade-off for basically everyone was it was rational to get vaccinated, given the level of testing and how many people had been vaccinated before you, given what we were seeing with COVID, right?
I got vaccinated. I was fine with me. You know, I think if someone in my case, I've had my children, I've had plenty of vaccinations in my life. Lots of people got it before me. Most of them didn't keel over. Some danger, sure, but go ahead, stick it in me. I've lived a full life.
That was a forced choice. You're eventually going to get COVID, and the question is, do you want to be vaccinated when you do, right? There was a period where that forced choice, where it was just obviously reasonable to get vaccinated,
And I remember listening to the Weinsteins on this too, because you know Brett and Heather were basically like, "Well, we're a little nervous about this RNA vaccine. We prefer kind of the older vaccine." But I mean, I thought they were fairly moderate on it,
actually, because there was every reason to expect that while it wasn't a perfectly sterilizing vaccine, it was going to knock down transmission a lot. And that matters. And so it wasn't just a personal choice. You were actually being a good citizen when you decided to run whatever risk you were going to run to get vaccinated, because there are people in our society who can't get vaccinated. I mean, I know people who can't take any vaccines. They're so allergic to, I mean, they in their own person seem to justify all of the fears of the anti-vax cult. I mean, it's like they're the kind of person who Robert Kennedy Jr. can point to and say, see, vaccines will fucking kill you, right? Because of the experience. I know people who have kids who fit that description, right? So we should all feel a civic responsibility to be vaccinated against egregiously awful and transmissible diseases for which we have relatively safe vaccines, to keep those sorts of people safe.
And there was a period of time when it was thought that the vaccine could stop transmission.
Yes. And so again, all of this has begun.
And then it didn't.
To shift. I don't think it has shifted as much as Brett Weinstein thinks it's shifted. But yes, there are safety concerns around the mRNA vaccines, especially for young men, right? As far as I know, that's the purview of actual heightened concern. But also there's now a lot of natural immunity out there. Basically everyone who was going to get.
All right. So we've listened to Sam talk about a lot of things. I thought the Twitter conversation was fairly good. As a pastor, I can't tell you how familiar all of this is. For the non-church goers, this is like how many scenes in church. Sam is defending blue church dogma and he won't back down. The ironies just drip like molasses. Jacob, of course, thought he was naive. I felt that way too. Begging for intimacy to avoid conflict, not a fan. Mark LeFevre says, forcing a thing that is not meant to be. There was nothing holding them together. I think about Eric Weinstein, of course. If you go back to the D.C. Schindler, Jonathan Peugeot, and of course Peugeot's sort of the power of naming, but of course when you name, it's really in a sense also got to, it's also emanation when you name, in that if the naming isn't right, if the group isn't right, if the cohesion isn't right, it sort of falls apart, and that's exactly what the IDW did. Sorry, Lex, the IDW must have divorced Sam. I gotta find the threads that I thought really were. Hang on, Twitter's just so ridiculous to navigate sometimes. Oh yeah, Hunchu was the one who really jumped in. Fraud, big capital letters. I'm like, which one's the fraud? Which one's the fraud? Can you say more, please? And he has taken zero stances on anything, hasn't said a single controversial thing. He's not an AI expert. He's talking about Lex. He's a computer security expert. He exists solely for pushing the current thing and even somehow authored a paper on COVID masking. The guy is captured by his own podcast. Let's see if Twitter will serve this out in reasonable order. Gosh, this sounds like a bad list of personal grievances. I get it. How about he started deleting podcasts about his support for effective altruism after SBFBF got caught? Ooh, I didn't know that. See, that's why y'all are so much smarter than me, because you know so much more than I do. Or he blocks an actual AI researcher on Twitter for disagreeing with him in public, even though he was on the podcast, Gary Marcus. Like, that hurts. How about having the CEO of Pfizer on the podcast, and instead of asking him tough questions about Pfizer and the vaccine, he throws softballs for an hour? let's see, where, because this then continued to branch out because Kale got into the mix. Attention Eater Feeder says, Sam is Blue Church for the affluent. I was listening to him for a long time, but then I've understood what he's doing. His quest against self and free will is a part of that. There are a couple others I wanted to grab into here. Eric Young, good comment. Sam Harris, I got the wrong answer in 2020 to 2022 because I'm smart and listen to the experts. Brett was listening to dumb people in 2020 to 2022 and accidentally got the right answer anyway. If we do this all again, I'm going to obey lockdowns because I'm smart. Fox Sake says, doesn't ask tough questions. The old Joe Rogan complaint. I'm not sure why it's lost on so many that Lex and Joe insist openly they're having conversations, not hard-hitting interviews, despite even Kanye's outburst at Lex. Lex is also incredibly self-deprecating. A couple more I wanted to grab here. Kale jumps into the mix. Having a conversation with Kale coming up soon. My comment, you have to build relationships first if you want to lean hard into an issue in a conversation and have it be effective and not just lead to deflection or defensiveness. And what I mean there is have it be effective to really be listened to. It doesn't mean that the other person's going to agree with you, but you have to have that relational capital with the person. Clarkton Tweeter, Trump literally broke Sam. Find God, Sam. and then Nate jumped into it. So, Han Chu, assume Peter Thiel is new right. Weinstein, Eric, is no longer working for Thiel. Eric Weinstein is free to remain cathedral with no conflict. Thiel himself is Blue Church recheck. Nate Heil, I just don't see Weinstein that way. He's too disconnected from power and too out of step with the fusion of neoliberalism and social progressivism that defines Blue Church. Kale, he's a weirdo. He's not accepting any sense. He says what he thinks. He says what he actually thinks. There's no Kettman in him. His brother is even more discordant. I imagine there would be one mainstream person in our institutions that rule us that would dare to even like one of his tweets. Nate says, precisely. Han Shu, wait a second. The Cathedral of Blue Church both rely on institutional power, not individual power. The power in either is in the invisible hand to limit any member's behavior. They are often free to do so as they wish as long as they do not commit open heresy. Consider his position in asking for rational discourse for Netflix protesters against David Chappelle while calling Trump an existential threat. Exactly the same IDW playbook as Sam Harris, rational discourse for things I like, not open for discussion for things I don't. Blue Church tactics. Nate Heil, I've completely different issues with the IDW. It is just a defense of modernity, but your working definition of Blue Church is too Trump-centric to be useful. I don't understand it that way. There are definitely identifiable policies which Weinstein doesn't support. Han Shu, forget Trump as such. Weinstein's limits of reasonable and rational discourse seem to coincide directly with cathedrals. He has cathedral credentials. He's always talking about how Brett should get a Nobel. He admires the cathedral as institution. How is he anti-cathedral? Disc Epstein, sure. And Brett is championing ivermectin, or at least defending it. But I don't think that anti-cathedral because it's far too late. The New York Times, surely the cathedral, published an opinion piece about masks not working. Where were these 2 years ago? Brett has been challenging the mainstream COVID narrative the entire time. What do you mean, Nate says. Kale, indeed he has and has paid for it dearly. The IDW is frankly too low res. There is no federalism to the thing. It was, if anything, a loose confederacy of cranky types annoyed with nascent neo-pieties. Some broke away from the cathedral tractor beam, some ditched. It was and remains connected to a committed to Enlightenment principles and as an all-liberal club. It's not, you know, you got to remember that Nate's an anarchist, so that's he's a Christian anarchist, so that's Nate, and that's where he fits into this. Not one post-liberal or traditionalist in the entire crew, save the sinking ship of modernism and liberalism was at its mission. Look at the Alliance of Responsible Citizens, another liberal-only club, and I think Nate is right in that, and the real tensions are now modernity. What in modernity and liberalism is worth saving, and what isn't? So the other clip that caught my eye was about Joe Rogan. I thought Sam made some sense.
Well, because you brought up Joe, he's somebody like you I look up to. I've learned a lot from him.
Not quite sure what I think of Lex in this sort of posture. I'm curious to hear what your comments are going to be.
Because yeah. I think who he is privately as a human being, also he's kind of the voice of curiosity to me. He inspired me that so unending, open-minded curiosity, much like you are the voice of reason. They recently had a podcast. Joe had recently had a podcast with Jordan.
A certain kind of reason.
Jordan Peterson, and brought you up saying they still have a hope for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Any chance you talk to Joe again and reinvigorate your friendship?
Yeah, well, I reached out to him privately when I saw that
clip. Did you use the power of love?
Joe knows I love him and consider him a friend, right? So there's no issue there.
They must have said something about the power of love earlier in the podcast.
He also knows I'll be happy to do his podcast when we get that together. You know, so there's no—I have got no policy of not talking to Joe or not doing his podcast. Mm-hmm.
It's almost—he's almost a corporation. He has a policy.
I mean, I think we got a little sideways along these same lines where, you know, we've talked about Brett and Elon and other people. It was never to that degree with Joe because Joe's in a very different lane, right? He's, and consciously so. I mean, Joe is a stand-up comic who interviews, who just is interested in everything, interviews the widest conceivable variety of people and just lets his interests collide with their expertise or, you know, lack of expertise. I mean, it's a super wide variety of people. He'll talk about anything and he can always pull the ripcord saying, you know, I don't know what the fuck I'm saying. I'm a comic. I'm stoned. We just drank too much.
Now, actually, I really appreciated Sam's comments here and, you know, I gained from them. I gained insight from them. So, you know, I poke a lot at Sam for a lot of things. So I should give him the points when he says something. I think, yeah, that's good. That's well said.
Much, right? Like it's very entertaining. It's all in, you know, to my eye, it's all in good faith. I think Joe is an extraordinarily ethical, good person.
Also doesn't use Twitter. Doesn't really use
right.
Twitter.
Yeah, yeah. No, the crucial difference, though, is that because he is an entertainer first, I mean, I'm not saying he's not smart and doesn't understand things. What's potentially confusing is he's very smart and he's also very informed. His full-time job is taught.
And, you know, his observation that he's an entertainer is a good one because, of course, he sort of goes after Brett and Heather. And again, my real interest in this is just my fascination with the relational dynamics because, obviously, churches are just warrens of these kinds of petty relational fallouts and difficulties. I mean, in many ways, helping people maintain relationships is the bread and butter of what a local church pastor does. Helps people get along with each other. They're going to have their spats, help them make up, help them to see a bigger vision, help create the container that holds them in. Now obviously, there is no container, and you almost get the sense that in sort of a C.S. Lewis way, there's an inner ring. And what held them together was the inner ring, and Eric Weinstein naming it just sort of created, but it didn't that naming thing that Peugeot talks about was insufficient to actually instantiate a thing. And so much of what I think we're needing to do today is to try to create spiritual bodies. And the IDW was an insufficiently strong spiritual body to hold them together, which sort of creates the energy for Lex Friedman's disappointment and anxiety about the breakdown of the spiritual body that he sort of aspired to and looked up to of somewhat cathedral or blue church heterodox high status individuals. So yeah, will people in the comment section have opinions? Gosh, I don't know. You think they will? I think they will. People on Twitter certainly had opinions. But again, to me, it's sort of watching these conflicts sort of reveals the map in the way that a lightning in a dark evening sort of reveals the landscape. You know, I've over the last couple of years, I've been reading and doing audiobooks of a bunch of World War II naval stuff. And, you know, you get a storm and radar, the Japanese haven't really invested in radar like the Americans have, like the British have, and the Germans are a little late to that game too. But so, you know, you're out there in ships in the night and, you know, you're looking for these mammoth battleships with these enormous guns, and suddenly there's lightning in the distance and you realize, oh, there's a battleship just over there. And it's like two ships no longer passing in the night. They see each other. And, you know, then there's going to be a naval battle. So these moments are interesting, just sort of getting a sense of the landscape illuminated, what was real, what was not, who was right, who was wrong. Maybe I'll just share one last little clip thing. So Rod shared with me a really great clip of Mary Harrington talking about someone on Twitter sent me the Unheard conversation, which was also very interesting. There's a chance I might talk to Mary coming up soon. I don't usually look for author or celebrity conversations, but what she said to what she said in so many conversations that are all over the internet right now just piqued my interest. And she said, well, I don't have, nobody's interested in me telling my story. I said, I'm interested. I'm very interested. Stories are what I do. But
the bit is that she's approaching marriage and she's approaching the idea of relationships as though it's all about what it does for me and what it makes me as a person. Yeah. And, what does it bring to me? You know, and underpinning that is this completely unexamined assumption that our default condition is always to be alone, and that in fact it's desirable to reattain a condition.
And maybe this is what Lex is fearing and avoiding.
Where we can be absolutely alone if necessary. And my argument is that that's fundamentally predicated on an abundance of resources. And I don't think that we can be confident enough that that's that material substrate will continue to obtain for enough women for us to be promoting that as a way of approaching what relationships are and how we inhabit them. I mean, if I'm right, again, this is really the old lefty and the old anti-capitalist in me talking, but I've never quite been able to shake an apocalyptic feeling, and nothing which has happened really since 2016 has done anything to assuage my feelings that really, really we are sort of scraping the barrel of what progress is able to afford us, you know, in a great many wider fields than just that of feminism. You know, I feel like we're reaching diminishing returns on consumer capitalism. We're diminishing returns in terms of you look at fracking and the amount of energy that goes in for the amount of energy that comes out. It feels as though we're scraping the bottom of the barrel on a number of fronts.
Yeah.
And I'm far from uncomplicatedly a sort of Greta Thunbergite, but I do wonder sometimes how much longer we can keep running out over thin air. And again, you know, I hope I'm wrong, but what if I'm right? Then, if I'm right, and if my hunch is right, and really this isn't going to continue, then sooner or later material abundance for everybody is going to come to an end. And to my eye, that's already happened for the working classes. That was what happened under Thatcher and Reagan. And it's coming for the lower middle classes now. You know, everything which happened under COVID was, looked to me, whatever the stated intention was, like a methodical asset stripping of the petit bourgeoisie in favor of an enormous upward transfer of wealth so that progress and abundance can continue for the people at the top just for a little bit longer, just at the expense of immiserating yet another rung at the bottom of the social ladder. And I think, well, you know, if this is right, I will get back to marriage and the importance of marriage in this context. But really, if the world is poorer and more dangerous and more unpredictable, and you're a woman and you want to have kids, you'd be mad to try and go it alone. You would be, you know, if the world gets more violent, do you really want to be navigating it without a big strong guy who's got your back? I mean, that sounds like from the point of view of a world of abundance, that sounds like an incredibly regressive thing to say. But imagine not believing that in a world which is full of unpredictable, violent people who don't play by the rules. Imagine not having a husband in that world. You know, it's a living nightmare. And yeah, I mean, this is really
So the apocalypse, and that's what I noticed. Part of the freshness about many of these new heterodox voices, there is their apocalyptic quality. And of course, we've just had a pandemic, which was apocalyptic. This is very clear in Mary Harrington. It's not conservatism. It's often from the lips of those who are deeply on the left. And you know, Peterson's new embrace of conservatism as such. In that sense, Nate Heil is right, because it's a let's not lose modernity. Let's not lose liberalism. Liberalism is the thing that brought us here and brought us all of this success. And wokeness is, you know, wokeness is going to push it out over the edge. It's not conservatism. It's often from the lips of those who are deep in the left. The iron box of secularism left, where all utopias are bracketed by birth and death, forced a realism born of constraint. Bring heaven down so often brings hell up. The prophets of streaming TV whisper that our eschatology is dystopian. The new post-progressive heterodox prophets are just filling in the blanks. And I think this, in many ways, is some affirmation of what Nate is noting in the IDW types. As here Sam is frustrated because Brett isn't sufficiently rational, and Joe Rogan is an entertainer, so he gets a pass, and you know, Lex just wants to keep the family together. But others are looking at the future and saying, maybe in fact we need to think about our situation in far more apocalyptic terms. So that was kind of an all over the place little video, but it's ending now, and I'll be interested to see what you have to say.